As Unitarian Universalists, we don't really ever mention evil, sin, or forgiveness as a part of our religious heritage or as a part of our weekly Sunday worship service. For many of us, these words come from our former religious traditions, and those are traditions we left behind because they no longer worked for how we view the world or for our view of how humanity looked, that view being the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. But we also rarely use these words of evil, sin, and forgiveness because we seem somehow to link them together, the one leading to the other, with therefore the root cause of needing forgiveness coming from those dual concepts of evil and sin. We turn away from those two root words of evil and sin because our focus on humanity is on its inherent goodness, of what we are capable of doing, of achieving, of becoming. And the words of evil and sin harken back to a different religious path that spoke more to the weakness of a person, to the potential immoral path of a person, to one who needed to confess their sins, who needed to feel shamed and like a lump of clay, to be molded not by oneself or by experience, but to be molded by God, to be blessed and to be saved, to be forgiven. In this Western culture of ours, where our Puritan forebears are our undergirding, and the ever-growing concept of our being a Christian nation as our current everyday overlay, we can now find endless books written about forgiveness. There are seminars and workshops, institutes and symposiums. There are study circles and book groups, and certainly church Bible classes focusing on this subject. I was recently given a book to read called Transformation, which is about becoming healthier in all ways, and one of the chapters on weight loss was on the importance of being able to forgive, that being unable to forgive was just one more thing weighing us down and keeping us from feeling and from being healthy. Despite this bevy of literature citing our need for forgiveness, I continue to feel challenged by the concept of forgiveness itself, because to me it still felt tied to, bound up, and inextricably linked with evil and sin and the need to ask God for forgiveness. It remained a challenging topic to tackle, and I felt as though I was not coming any closer to an understanding of it or how to reach it than when I first began seriously considering this as a topic for this service. And then one day, Mike Santo and I were talking about this, that, and the other thing, and I somehow mentioned that I was going to be doing a service on forgiveness some Sunday coming up, and he said, quick as a flash, I'm against forgiveness. Somehow, his firm landing on being against forgiveness fine-tuned me in the opposite response, one of being for forgiveness. And I asked him to share this Sunday with me, to share an exchange of ideas related to forgiveness, and so the chase for clarification was on. I remember working in a Lutheran church for a summer, helping one of my friends who's a Lutheran pastor. And as I was putting together the Sunday bulletin for him one day, I noticed that confession was listed as a part of the service. Well, I only thought Catholics went to confession. I didn't know that Lutherans did this as well. Every week, he told me. Every week we confess our sins and are forgiven, he said with such brightness. Every week? I repeated. Really? Well, you guys are sure slow learners. Aren't you given a list of 10 thou shalt nots to memorize? Just don't do those things. And then there's no more need for you to confess. I was teasing him, of course, but then I said more seriously that I thought it felt like an empty game to me. Sin, confess, be forgiven every week for one's entire life. Well, how easy was that? Where was the learning curve in all of that? Where was the sense of personal responsibility for one's actions if one could do whatever one wanted, realize, uh-oh, shouldn't have done that, confess, and be forgiven? It felt to me as though the burden of having done something wrong was too easily lifted. Not that I wanted to be punitive, but I was definitely looking for a different model of where forgiveness might actually take place and make a difference within a person and ultimately within society. For wasn't our goal as human beings to continue to mature and become better and help make the world become a better place? With the model of sin and confession and being forgiven as a matter of course, I could see no forward movement, but only an endless cycle of repeated wrong behavior, thus continuing the notion that we are all sinners and that we all somehow need the wisdom of God to forgive we shabby beings. If it's a given that one is going to sin and be forgiven every week, well, so what? Then it's a game. A person could do whatever they like, sin, and be forgiven, and then sin again, and so on and so forth. There seemed to be missing a moral code, the human court of ethics steering the ship. It struck me as a control issue the church had created to keep people coming through its doors, handing out sin with one hand and forgiveness with the other, being tithed, paying penance, keeping the pastorate next door well-run and staffed, keeping the church alive by pressing people down to their least common denominator, not for the good of the people, but for the good of the church. And then one day, a light that led my way toward a stronger consideration of what forgiveness might look like was when I remembered my grandmother telling me that in Judaism, it is not God who forgives, but only the one who is wronged who can forgive. With forgiveness being illustrated in this manner, to me, it now seemed like a concept that I might not only be able to get my head around and truly see the value of, but which might actually be of value to people who, by their own admissions, by their own internal wrestlings, needed to find a way towards some level of inner peace in order to go on in life, and even in order to finally let go and die. With my being half Jewish, I have always been completely aware of the evil in the world when half of my gene pool was slaughtered simply because they were Jewish. That I cannot and never will forgive. Evil should never be forgiven or forgotten, for then it is either a form of denial, where not only healing is impossible, but worse, where there is a distinct possibility that repeated similar acts may occur. On the other hand, there are many life moments which one does not forgive oneself for that should be forgiven. Having an abortion, spanking a child, losing one's temper and saying things you didn't mean to, not being the perfect person you were raised to be or have put the pressure upon yourself to be, forgiving your parents for not being who you wished they were or who you needed them to be, being able to forgive human fallibilities, our own and others. I don't see forgiveness as denial. I see it as a path toward understanding where one was at that time, given what one knew then, and for accepting oneself at that time. Denial is, I didn't do that. Acceptance is, I did that, and it was wrong. Now that I understand more about what happened, I understand it better, and I can forgive. Despite the Jewish premise of being forgiven by those who have wronged, sometimes the only one to grant the forgiveness is oneself, say in the case of having an abortion that was right at the time. But a woman may still feel shame and guilt and a sense of wrongness about it because of how she was raised or the culture she was raised in or her now mature self considering what might have been. The wrongdoing cannot be forgiven by the wronged, the aborted fetus. So it can only come from oneself to oneself, forgiving the person one was at that time. I have my own situations that I cannot forgive, that I will never forgive, and that eat away at me. Is that healthy? Is there another way other than forgiveness for me to work through those things so that I can move on and move beyond? Not as if not to remember or as if these things hadn't happened, but to be able to function better, to feel better inside for health's sake. Those are the wounds, I think, are the challenging parts of ourselves we all need to work on at some point. Forgiveness, an ability to reconcile in some way, our need to forgive. There is often the conjecture that one must forgive and move on and that the past is the past. I don't believe that the past is frozen. I think that there are many past deeds that continue to live on in a person, in a family, in society. The past is with us all the time. We must not turn a blind eye to it, but must look upon it squarely without wavering and address it. We cannot move forward without knowing the past because it moves with us like a shadow. The challenge is how to deal with it, and forgiveness is one such way. Not to use forgiveness as the same as saying, oh, well, that's okay, but to be able to say, I understand how that act came to be perpetrated upon another. Restorative justice is society's secular way of implementing forgiveness. And great healing for both the offender and the victim or the victim's family have occurred over the past decade or so with this important but difficult bridging of incredible pain with love. As this church year proceeds, day toward day, month upon month, the truth of life not going as planned is evident in our nation. Although most of us feel that we are simply ordinary folk going along in our ordinary ways with nothing remarkable to tell, life often has another take on this. In sudden swiftness, even on bright, sunlit days when nothing bad should happen, we are brought news of hardship and despair, of illness and of cancer, and all too often of death. No one is spared. Not the elderly, not the young. No matter the best laid plans, life arrives and shakes us to the core and makes us have to look into its eyes and see all that it contains. Beautiful moments and plain days and unbearable anguish. We may think that we are choosing the paths we find ourselves upon, but it is really life that chooses the path for us in so many ways. We may believe that if we do certain things in a certain way that there are guarantees. Guarantees of how things will turn out for ourselves, for our children, for our dearest friends. But life doesn't play itself out in this manner. It is mercurial, unable to be gathered up and gathered in. If you are alive in it, life will split apart at some point, in some way, someday. Be certain of that, and try to be brave in the face of it. But mostly be kind to yourselves. When life and all of its uncertainties meet up with you unexpectedly and stop you in your tracks, be kind to yourselves and know that only time is the healer. When you find yourself at a crossroads looking as far as you can beneath the undergrowth to discern which way to take, as in Robert Frost's poem, The Road Less Taken, be kind to yourselves for the choices you are making, for the choices you will soon need to make, for the choices you have already made. For your past as much as for your present, for the moments seized or allowed to slip away, for all that you have done or didn't do. Be kind to yourselves for what has been. We are all on the same road called life, so we have that in common. But it is still the road less traveled we journey upon, because whatever happens is happening uniquely to each and every one of us, sometimes for the first time, and sometimes now yet again. Understanding this juxtaposition of choice and happenstance is what unites us in humanity. Being there for each other with kindness and with forgiveness toward ourselves and others is what defines us ultimately.